Hello again, this is Gary Williams from the EFT Hub, and a quick reminder to always refer to our disclaimer at our website EFTHub.com before listening to the following audio. So I'm joined today by Sue Beer, and Sue, you're going to show us some new points today, aren't you, or a new way of using some points?
Yeah.
And also talk about the addicted heart. Can you explain more about that?
Yes. Okay. So the idea of the addicted heart is really elaborated in my book, which is called Healing the Addicted Heart, Five Stages of Transformation with EFT. So what I wanted to do was take as the starting place really any problem and then go into some depth about how we become addicted or attached to problem states. So it could be what we would think of as an addiction, you know, being addicted to something like, you know, drugs, alcohol, food, sex, relationships, those kind of things. But we're equally attached to problems that don't fit into those kind of categories. And I believe that these are ways that we identify ourselves in a fear state.
Right.
And when we do that, when we're kind of living from that reality, that fearful reality, we miss out on our connection to love, which is in fact always with us, you know, regardless of anything that we may have ever said, thought or done, or, you know, anything that's ever been said, thought or done to us, we'd still have a connection to love. And sometimes we kind of pop into that, you know, in moments when we suddenly kind of access happiness, or we suddenly find ourselves in the flow. You know, we have phrases like, you know, being in the zone, that it's, you know, everybody kind of knows that experience of suddenly feeling connected. And everybody knows the suffering that we kind of experience, because we're constantly trying to get back to that. We're constantly trying to find something that we've lost. And then, of course, when we do that, we're in the state of the addicted heart. The state of the addicted heart is constantly searching for something outside yourself to make yourself feel better.
Right. So are we saying, you know, the addiction is something similar to, say, desire, as it were, you know, like the Buddhist teachings, when they talk about pain being, you know, desire being a problem, as it were, a pain?
Yes. Yeah. And I think that kind of translates to the idea of craving. So I mean, in a sense, there's nothing wrong with desire in its purest sense. But in addiction, it has a kind of desperate edge to it. Like, right. You know, I'm not okay as I am, and, you know, unless I have that substance, you know, that person, that thing to complete me,
right,
I am really not okay as I am.
Right.
So that's the state of the addicted heart, and that's when we're tuned into the frequency of fear, with, you know, with all its complexity and all the different forms that fear shows up in, you know, when we're coming from that place.
A lot of people say, don't they, oh, you know, I'll be happy when.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, many people, they live their whole lives kind of projecting into the future. You know, maybe their happiest experiences when they're kind of, you know, planning something that will happen, some, you know, time when they get their heart's desire, you know, to put it that way, and keep themselves out.
Right.
of the moment. So yes, absolutely.
So it is a very common thing, really, then, isn't it?
I mean, I'd say it's universal. I mean, it's so kind of universal that it goes unquestioned.
Right.
And we're often looking for the solutions to our problems to be found, you know, as something huge, some sort of mind-blowing, you know, idea, or, you know, again, something outside us comes to kind of rescue us, or, you know, change the way that we feel somehow. Whereas what I've come to understand is that, you know, the real solutions to our problems are, you know, they're already there. They're in the kind of the minutiae. They're in looking at the way that we're keeping ourselves out of the present moment, in the belief that something, you know, in the future or something outside ourselves will make us better. So it's not the fact of lack or loss or needing to change a circumstance so much as the way that we think about that and the way that we believe that that is so, and in that way kind of keep ourselves from connecting to the truth about ourselves,
right.
to really knowing ourselves. So if, you know, of course we can apply the, you know, the tapping to you know, the idea that you know, even though I'm not okay until I get whatever, you know, I'm not okay if I don't have X, Y, and Z. So it's kind of about making different decisions about what we might choose to tap on to get to really get at the roots of what keeps us out of our, you know, what I'd say is our natural state of joy and happiness and connection to love.
Yeah. And a lot of people, you know, aren't happy, are they, inside? And they hear people talking about, you know, how that's done, and all you've got to be is contented within and you'll be happy forever.
Yeah.
How do we do that?
Well, I mean, this is a really good question, because we can end up, you know, on some kind of eternal pursuit of the thing that makes us better, which again is really just, it's the addicted heart. It's the belief that something outside ourselves will make us feel better. We think if we read another book, or if we go on another workshop, then that will be the thing. And sometimes we actually overlook what we already know inside ourselves and what has already been told to us, and, you know, this book and that book and you know, countless workshops. Will we actually get what we already know that is being kind of reinforced and told to us again? Because we can kind of shut our minds to it, and as long as we keep believing that something outside ourselves will get us to the point of change, we're not looking in the right place for our solutions. So what we actually need to do is to have some way to sort of anchor us into the knowing that the truth about ourselves is that, you know, that state of, you know, being in the zone, of being in the flow, of being connected to love is actually our natural state.
Right.
So this is what I've been working with is what I call the heart anchor, which uses a couple of different points. You know, one being the heart point, which is right in the middle of the chest, or that would be the same as the heart chakra area, and just rubbing lightly with the flat of the hand in that, on that point there, at the same time as using your other hand to cradle the back of the head, you know, like you would cradle a baby's head.
Right.
There's actually several important points around that area. The two points on the side of the head, right at the top of the neck, at the brain stem area, work in a similar way to the karate chop point and the sore spot point in terms of correcting psychological reversal. So there's that happening. And the heart point is something that acupuncturists use to kind of, you know, open up the chest area, the lung area. And that point there, which is the heart point, is connected to a whole series of kind of fine energy vessels that it's possible to get, you know, the experience actually physically of the heart and chest and lung area opening up when we rub that central point in the middle, which is the heart point. So there's that, you know, there are actual kind of, you know, energetic and physiological effects from touching these points. And also I think the sort of healing impact of using two hands, so you've got a kind of connection, the heart area and to that area at the base of what's actually the emotional brain in there.
Right.
The healing power, you know, between the hands, there's that, you know, energetic and healing connection, I believe. So we've got these kind of, you know, sort of physiological and energetic effects. But what I've been doing in my work is making that touch anchor to the heart represent this state of mind whereby we suddenly access the truth about ourselves. So we can set that up so it is literally like an anchor to bring ourselves back more consistently to that state of mind, and we can set it up, kind of learn it by attaching any teeny weeny positive to the moment that we touch those points. So any teeny weeny positive, like just thinking of our favorite color, for instance. So right. We might think of deep indigo-y blue or something like that. If that color kind of makes your heart sing in even the smallest, tiniest way, then that's a useful thing to begin by thinking of that whilst touching these points. Or we might think initially of something like, you know, our favorite pet or favorite person or something like that. Just the tiniest willingness, however bad we might actually be feeling about ourselves, whatever it is that we can think of, and just gives us the tiniest little bit of a more positive feeling. And then we're anchoring that with touching these points at the moment that we feel that feeling, however small it is, in the beginning place. And what we're actually doing here is making a kind of physical anchor to the part of the setup phrase where we say, I deeply and completely love and accept myself. Right. A lot of the time what we're taught actually is just to say that bit. It doesn't matter if you believe it or not. And you probably know this in your own experience, Gary, that you start off by just saying that anyway. And then when you've done some clearing work on yourself, it gradually seems to seem truer.
Right.
Does that make sense? That you get maybe just get more comfortable with saying it, or you enjoy saying it more, or you just argue with it less, you know, something like that. So I started to think, you know, more about, you know, how we say that and what, you know, what effect is that having, and how can we kind of, you know, increase that. So what I realized is that actually just saying that positive affirmation part of the setup statement speaks to the part of our mind that remains forever connected to love, as I was saying earlier on. So whether or not we may have become completely kind of cut off from that, completely unconscious, but I absolutely believe that remains, and it's that we're kind of accessing whenever we shift anything with EFT, even if it's just for a kind of nanosecond.
Right.
So what I really wanted to do was to have some kind of way, and this with this physical touch, with the heart anchor, it's another way to kind of bring us to that point of being able to access the positive, even while we're experiencing the negative.
Right.
And so it builds on the, you know, the setup statement, but also, you know, as with any belief, if we're just open to the possibility that there is a part of the mind that knows absolutely everything that we need to know to heal and change, if we go along with that, with just the tiniest bit of willingness, you know, just being open to that idea being a possibility, it kind of becomes the truth. Changes happen that kind of convince us of the validity of that idea.
Right.
Does that make sense to you?
Would it be good, say, for our listener now to kind of experiment with that? Would that be possible?
Yeah, we can absolutely do that. And the first thing to do is just to have enough willingness to hold in your mind the idea that there may be a part of your mind that represents your unconscious wisdom, your connection to love, and that is the same for anyone, regardless of what you think about yourself or what your experiences have been, just to be open to that as a possibility. That's the first thing. That's all you need.
And if anyone's going to, you know, try this, then obviously, you know, they should take responsibility for themselves, shouldn't they? And not
absolutely not, take responsibility for themselves.
If they're suffering from any kind of extreme emotional or psychological problems, obviously they should consult their medical practitioner before taking part in any holistic treatment, really. So,
well, yes, and absolutely. I mean, I completely agree with that.
Right.
Yes. But just to be able to hold the idea in mind, so that tiny little bit of willingness, and then the next step is just to get the experience of what it feels like to touch those points. So you put one hand just on the the heart point, which is just the middle of the chest.
Okay, yeah. It doesn't matter which hand then, left or right? It
doesn't matter, whichever one works for you. And I would say rub rather than tap.
Yeah,
this area.
In a gentle way, yeah?
In a gentle way. It's a very sensitive point, so it just needs a very kind of light touch. And you want to rub in the direction, clockwise direction. Okay?
Yeah.
And then at the same time, take your other hand and just put that at the top of your neck, where the sort of bulge of the skull comes, or where you would cradle a baby's head if you were doing such a thing.
Yeah. So it's a bit further up from the neck then.
Yeah. So it's like literally where the skull kind of protrudes.
Okay,
and
yeah.
So you've got the sort of the palm of your hand on one side of the very top of the spine, and then your fingers on the other side of the very top of the spine. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then just do a little rubbing, you know, a kind of rubbing, slight gentle movement with your hands. And then just imagine the connection between the heart point and this point at the back of your head. And then just notice that as you rub that heart point in particular, you might feel a, you know, a sense of that little slight opening up of the chest area. And usually you can just close your eyes and just be aware that there's a constant communication that's going on between your heart and your brain, between the heart's truth and the messages that are sent all around the body, actually, from the heart via the brain to every area in the body. But just for now, we just want to be aware of what that actually feels like at a physical level, to make that connection between these two points. And then just take a deep breath and put your hands down for a moment.
That's another one of those kind of comforting positions as well.
It does feel comforting.
Hmm. I wonder if we have a memory actually of being a baby, you know, being maybe held in that way as well.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. It's kind of that sense of being held.
Hmm.
When I teach people to do this, I like to do it very, very, you know, simply in small steps. So what I would do is, first of all, exactly what we've just done now, which is literally kind of touch and make the connection between those points. And then chances are that you get that feeling. It's just a nice kind of comforting feeling, warmth, feeling held. It may be that some little bit of fear or doubt or, you know, something that doesn't feel so comfortable and held emerges. And that's when I would actually kind of stop the process and do a little bit of tapping.
Right.
Just to clear any interference that crops up, you know, even at that sort of first stage. So you go very, 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 very gently, because sometimes just the whole idea that we have this connection to love, which is actually the source of all healing and change, brings up fear.
Yeah.
No, because there's this the polarity of mind, which is what we're dealing with here, really. You know, the you know, love versus fear. So, you know, the initial accessing of love, even if we don't feel very much of it, at a deeper level, there may well be a kind of fear response that comes up. So you want to go very, very slowly. So you do a little bit of tapping, you know, to clear whatever negative feeling has popped up or thought.
Would that be different with everybody or...?
I mean, some people won't get that at all, but that's kind of what I'm checking, you know, when I'm teaching people to do this, because the whole point of this is that we don't need to be attached or identified with fear. We just notice it, and then, you know, clear it, and then once it's cleared, we naturally come back into alignment with love, which is what the heart anchor is representing.
Yeah, and can we use a global statement then in that sense, you know, even though I have this fear or something?
Exactly,
like that?
Yeah, that's exactly what you do. Or you would just notice where, you know, where you felt it in your body. It doesn't matter too much what actual words you use. It's just kind of, you know, having your intention there to spot that something negative or fearful has popped up. Right. And instead of kind of immediately attaching to that and going, oh, you know, this doesn't work for me, it's more like, oh, okay, yeah, that, you know, fear has come up. Isn't that interesting? Right. And then just, you know, tapping to clear that. So we're moving, you know, out of a kind of immediate identification with fear and judging ourselves for, you know, whatever, right, you know, whatever we believe, you know, it's not working, I can't do it, you know. So that will be the first step. And then I wouldn't even move on until you can comfortably hold those points and just, you know, just feel the comfort and safety. And then once that's kind of just happening, then I would move on to touching the points at the same time as thinking of something positive. So deliberately thinking of something positive, like a favorite color or like the, you know, lovely sort of warm feelings you get thinking about your dog or, you know.
Can you run a kind of movie in your head or something like that? You
know, yeah, something... yeah, anything like that. So it's entirely kind of using your own, you know, imagination, creativity to do that while holding the points. There's, in fact, in my book, there's a good example of Annie, who set up her, you know, heart anchor for herself, sort of initially starting off by, I think she was thinking about her cat first of all, just touching the points at the same time as she got the what she described as warm, fuzzy feelings of thinking about her cat. Then she moved on to thinking about colour. So I think hers was a bluey, indigo-y colour, thinking of that at the same time as touching the points. And then what she did, which was quite a good idea, was to go through in her mind. She could remember photographs in her mind, although you could actually literally go and find photographs that represented kind of like snapshots of positive, happy experiences. And she literally kind of tuned into those, thought of those representations in a snapshot form at the same time as touching the heart points. And what she, as she says in the book, what she found was that she just started sort of playing around with it, and then she discovered that she'd be walking down the street and she'd suddenly see something, you know, maybe see something like a flower in a garden, and she would get the thought of, oh, you know, I could put that into my heart anchor. And so it started to kind of have a, you know, a power of its own.
Right. It's like having your own emotional scrapbook then, in a sense.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And this is what I encourage everybody to do this now, to literally have it like a scrapbook where, you know, anything, you know, positive that really, you know, sometimes you just see somebody smiling in the street and it kind of makes your heart sing. That's exactly it, you know, to anchor that. And then after a little while, you don't even really need to touch the points, you know. It'll be installed like software, so it will happen, you know, all by itself. And then once it's got some strength to it, once the heart anchor has got some strength to it, you can actually use it to bring negative experiences into it, because it'll be strong enough to dissolve the negative. Once the positive is kind of set up, and once the heart is the heart actually understands your intention, if you like, and it will have a power that is, you know, the power that goes with the true connection to love and wisdom, and that will always be stronger than, or, you know, any of the forms of fear, you know, whether it's, you know, anger or, you know, hate or guilt, because, you know, fear comes in, it's hugely complex, you know, different forms, whatever the form of it is, you know, if you bring that to the heart, that love will dissolve it. Love will dissolve fear.
There's been lots of research, isn't there, into the heart as well recently, talking about, you know, how it could be or could work as a brain, you know, in a neurological sense.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So there's actually there's quite a bit about this in my book, and there's also really interesting research out out there, you know, available to anybody that's interested in this. But it's really, really a fascinating area because it's, you know, to put it in a nutshell, you know, we're kind of accustomed to thinking of the, you know, the heart being the seat of wisdom and truth in a kind of metaphorical way. Well, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's proving that this is literally the case, and right. You know, the heart is kind of what connects us beyond ourselves to you know the metaphysical realm, right, quite literally, right. And it's also what is kind of like the master controller, you know, within the body, you know, rather than the brain, that the heart is influencing the brain and all of the other systems in the body. So it makes sense in, you know, in EFT terms, or in, you know, in terms of innovations with EFT to really have this as our kind of central point.
It's interesting we say
to
things,
include it anyway,
right. It's interesting that we say things like, you know, oh, my heart wasn't in that.
Yeah we do, and we talk about heartfelt beliefs, don't we, and hardening of the heart, and it's so sort of built into our language as a kind of reference point for you know, for all of our feeling and thinking states, sometimes we sort of overlook the obvious. Something becomes a, you know, we think of it in symbolic and metaphorical fashion, and then we kind of forget that, you know, it's symbolizing a literal truth,
right.
Which is, you know, and the power of that is actually, you know, available to us.
I was going to say we're getting to the heart of this, aren't we? Really?
Getting to the heart of the matter, yes.
But it's very interesting. And, you know, as I was saying, the neurology of that, does it mean, you know, if we are anchoring these things, are we building new connections rather than traditionally, you know, building the negative connections that we have?
Yes, it does. It literally does mean that. There's another thing that I find really interesting is that the heart anchor is a way to kind of like literally increase the capacity of our left frontal cortex. Now, just to explain this briefly, I mean the brain is split into, you know, right hemisphere and left hemisphere, and we actually process positive experiences and negative experiences in completely separate hemispheres, and we also the left frontal cortex is responsible for the way in which we process positive feelings and also those things that we want to move towards. So that will be, you know, the way that we evaluate new choices, positive choices, the things that are representing change and growth and healing. That's the left frontal cortex. Whereas the way that we process negative experiences and the things that we want to avoid and run away from, if you like, we process these through the right frontal cortex. So when we're stuck in the problem state or the state of the addicted heart, as I mentioned right at the beginning of this, we're kind of literally relying on the right frontal cortex, and we've kind of lost the power of the left. So doing something like building up your heart anchor is a great way to increase our capacity for choice, because we're literally developing that part of the brain that's kind of been in hibernation while we've been stuck in the problem state. And it, you know, in actual fact, we don't change things. We don't recover from addictions, you know, by avoiding them or running away from them or hating them. We change and heal because we come to value something more. In a sense, we open up ourselves, you know, into the flow, into the zone, and value a different way of being and living and experiencing ourselves more than whatever it was that we used to get out of the problem state.
Right.
You know, whether we were consciously aware of what that was before. So what I believe, you know, this is my work in a nutshell, is that actually we do need to do more than just clear the negatives in our change in our change work. I mean, I know that when we clear the negatives, we become more aware of the positives, because they're obscured by our kind of attachment to the problem state. But actually, you know, the physical reality, the bodily reality of it, is that we've kind of lost the ability for positive choice,
yeah,
and, you know, evaluating options for growth, because we haven't literally used that bit of the brain enough. So yes, cultivating the heart anchor is one thing that we need to do in its own right to sort of build up that capacity. And also, you know, what I found with clients who come to me, that whatever state they might be in at the beginning point, you know, they, you know, may have, you know, major problems with addiction, or, you know, just extreme sort of unhappiness and suffering, anybody can learn to build up their own heart anchor.
Right.
It doesn't depend on how bad you feel. You can also feel good even though you feel bad, which is, you know, a slightly sort of revolutionary idea as well. But that is the fact of the matter, that you don't have to wait till you feel better to start building up the heart anchor. And you start building that up even while you're kind of suffering, and then you begin to realize, well, actually, there must be some other part of the mind. If I can actually access these good feelings, it's not dependent on getting over the bad feelings.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, that in the morning we have to kind of recreate all those negative thoughts, don't we? So when we wake up, because, why do we do that, and how do we do that?
Yeah, well, we do it ourselves. We have to put them back in place, because that's what we think that's how it is. We've got, you know, we are very attached to, you know, to our suffering and pain. And, you know, again, that is the addicted heart. The addicted heart is, you know, is kind of, you know, us without realizing that we are so much more
than that. So it's like getting that first hit in the morning then, in an addiction sense.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess that we do kind of value, you know, familiarity and, you know, things being in place in the way that they were the day before and they were the day before that, you know. So when we, you know, we value something in that way, we wouldn't necessarily consciously think, oh, I'm valuing the same thing. But it gives us, you know, at a sort of deeper level, it gives us a sense of, you know, safety, in the sense of sameness is safety.
Right.
And we get, you know, we get very, very accustomed to kind of, you know, reducing ourselves down. And we, you know, meanwhile, the bit of our brain that can connect us to, you know, a much greater reality about ourselves sort of atrophies and, you know, kind of withers away somewhere, you know?
Yeah. So would it be a good idea in the morning then to maybe think of things that we appreciate, or, you know, that kind of thing, and then do this process at the same time?
Yes, absolutely, because that would be a really good way to kind of, you know, build up this part of the brain. So, I mean, there's no way that I'm saying we don't need to do our work, our clearing work, and our focusing on the negative. It's just that what I am saying is that we actually need to do more than that as well, and we can do this just for its own sake, you know, building up the heart anchor, using things like, you know, focusing on appreciation and gratitude, until we notice such an interference getting in the way that we need to actually do some tapping to clear that.
Right.
You know, like, I was saying, when we practice doing the heart anchor, first of all, that even just the very notion that we can connect to love may bring up fear thoughts, so we'd need to stop and clear that. It's the same thing if you do, you know, if you're working with your gratitude list, for instance, or just running through things that you appreciated from the day before. If you notice any interference to that, don't get attached to it, you know, don't identify with it, just go, okay, there's an interference now, I can tap with that,
right.
You know, because you might be thinking, oh, you know, I really appreciate the fact that that somebody brought me a cup of coffee, you know, at a certain point, and then you may get a thought like, oh, well, that was a first, wasn't it? You know,
I can't comment on that. Yeah,
that's certainly not an example from my life. But, no. you know, often thinking a positive will bring up a kind of polarity thought. So the trick is just not to identify it, and, you know, and then get locked into, you know, that state of the problem state, but just to notice it and right. to you know, do some clearing, and then we quickly bringing ourselves back into, you know, alignment with the truth, you know, which is represented by our love connection, represented by the heart right. anchor.
And does the process come with a warning that you could be amazingly happy afterwards?
Absolutely, yes. Right. Until you're not. Right. But then all you do is notice what it is that, you know, is interfering and bring yourself back. Because one of the big ways that we make ourselves really unhappy is that we think that, you know, happiness is once and for all, and I'll just clear all my stuff and I'll feel magnificently happy forever and ever and ever. Actually, we won't, because in this physical reality there's a constant dance between love and fear, really. And, you know, fear is really the ego mind, which loves complexity and problems and, you know any way that it can come up with another sort of way to trip us up. Right. Especially when we're feeling really good and we've cleared up a big problem or something like that, you know, it will. So often I'll have people come to me who have, you know, they have had an amazing result with EFT at some point, and then they feel like they've lost it because they had such a good experience, and then they've come up against a, you know, an apparently insurmountable problem. So, you know, they've got this sort of conviction that, oh, you know, it won't work. It worked on that, but it won't work on this. No, all that's happened really is that fear mind, you know, driven by the ego, has kind of snuck in there and, you know, tipped you out of love connection into fear mind, and then we've, you know, identified with that. So it's not that we'll never ever feel bad again once we've felt good. It's more a question of, you know, how quickly will you realign yourself, how quickly will you see through the illusion of fear and bring yourself back to right. to your heart connection, and that's, you know, that's one, cultivating the heart anchor is one way that we can do that, and also develop this mindset which kind of gets comfortable with the, you know, with the ebb and flow, but, you know, gets to kind of know that whenever you feel bad, it's, you know, that suffering is a sort of, you know, that's your signal to kind of, you know, step out of kind of judging it, judging yourself, and, you know, allow yourself to go back to love. Maybe do a bit of clearing, but the moment you drop that sort of identification that comes with judgment, you'll find yourself, you know, back
right.
in alignment anyway.
And people can play back this audio, can't they, and go through the process again so they get a good idea of how to use it.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's much more about this in my book, Healing the Addicted Heart.
Right.
You know, than we've just tip of the iceberg in what we're talking about now. But it's really fascinating stuff. And if anybody is interested, there's much more. And also, we have a Healing the Addicted Heart workshop, which is July the 15th to the 17th in London. And what I'm really looking forward to too is the masterclass in October, where I'll be talking about this stuff and with several of the other masters who are also talking about their innovations with EFT and their passions.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be an interesting event. Have you got websites there that people can search out more information and things?
Yeah,
like
the main website is www.eftevents.com
right.
for the masterclass. And, you know, my workshop and books and everything is at www.theeftcentre.com.
Right, and that's spelled in the English way, isn't it?
Spelled in the English way. And of course, the workshop Healing the Addicted Heart, Emma Roberts and I will be running that together.
Right.
As usual.
And I know you make a good team, don't you?
We do. Well, we have fun anyway.
Well, I've enjoyed our talk today. And I know, you know, obviously there's much more, isn't there, to what we've been talking about.
Yeah.
But hopefully it's given people a good idea of what it's all about.
I hope so. I really hope so. Yeah.
And we'll have you back again, of course, Sue, and we'll talk some more.
Love to.
Okay. Thanks for now.
Thanks very much. My pleasure. Bye.